live, actually. We are live. Hello. Hello, everyone. Welcome to our afternoon session at the LGM. I'm really happy to see you coming back from the workshops. We are kind of stretching the time a bit before we start because not everybody has arrived. And so I'm going to tell you and the audience that we had a great morning. We had a very productive community workshop, I think, and like a great vibe there, actually. I got to tell everyone, please make sure that I don't have to carry all the t-shirts back home with me. So if you want to have two shirts, get two shirts or bags. Put all the shirts you take with you in the bags that we have. Maybe you want to spread the word. Maybe you want to bring some presents to friends in your hometowns. It would be actually a very reasonable thing to do with all the t-shirts and bags. Because we are also trying to make the awareness of the Liberal Graphics meeting greater again. Also, especially for the people at home wondering, why am I watching this? Because we have a donations opportunity mentioned on the website. Please use it. This is the lightning talk session. Some people are filling the room now. Stefan, our first lightning talk presenter, is already getting ready. I'm trying to prepare some of the later speakers that they kind of get their laptop out when it's time to come on stage. After Stefan, Timothy is with Liberal Graphics for Kids, and then Thomas Mann. Is he here already? Thomas? Maybe we'll have to move him to a later slot then. Then I will show you something about this year's visual identity. Then Carsten Hartenfels, he knows definitely that he's on. And Pippin might be coming. So we have like roughly an hour. Now it's only 56 minutes left. Usually would say it's 5 minutes per person, but maybe we can have a bit longer lightning talks. Thomas? Ah, great. So you're up third. Yeah. Get your laptop warmed up. Okay, cool. So I suggest we start with the session. Do you need?
Yes, I take the hand mic. Okay, hello. I just wanted to present quickly how I build slides and maybe give you some kind of ideas how you could build your slides. So this is my slide deck, obviously. It's built with HTML. Why HTML? I have the option to bring in my content as a text file. I usually write it in Markdown and then it gets converted to HTML. It's versioned. I have image, video, iframe, and so on in it. So it's very easy. And wherever I go, I can just open a browser and it should work, basically. There are a lot of frameworks. Maybe the most popular is Reveal.js. You just put in some Markdown text and it makes you a HTML presentation out of it. That's what I started, but then I realized, it's not exactly what I want. And so like when I think long term, I probably need a presentation framework for the next 20 years. So how can a presentation framework evolve with myself? And the task is pretty small. It's just like bring some text and some images on the screen. So I decided, okay, let's do what I want and just like do it to my purpose. And so what you see is absolutely not for you. So I encourage you to do you and not like somehow go to these frameworks, because it's really like you can just like do it more individual, what you need and what, how you like to do it. So my learnings for the last couple of years was I need it very simple. I basically do a division between the framework and the content, because I often also like copy content from other sessions, and I just need to have like the framework somehow different. So my framework lives in the HTML file, and then here is in my directory, there is the content. So the framework itself, it's also super simple. I don't show you code, but I just show you how I build it. So this is living in my presentation, and you see it's coming from a CDN. It's direct from a Git repository. So whenever I want to update the framework, I just need to put this last Git version here, and I have updated my framework. So the HTML gets updated, but the content is not affected by it. So I load styles and some JavaScript logic, and then I have the slides here. I come back to that later. So the content itself is pretty simple. It's just markdown, and I have a separator between the different slides. So nothing special. All these frameworks who are doing it with markdown are doing the same. What I thought is, like, I need some kind of more styling. I want to have different kind of slides. So I have basically a theming within the slides. So every markdown slide, which is that one before the next one starts, every markdown can have a so-called front matter. It's also pretty standard, but like when you have like a slide, you can choose then your style just by including these front matter header. You can also do other stuff with this front matter. You can do, for example, in the background, you can bring in an iframe, or this is usually my second slide. Hi, I'm Steven. I'm a developer and I love typography. So in the background is my image. So you can just do these very simple stuff. Also, I'm a developer, so I need syntax highlighting. That's also pretty standard when you have a markdown processor. But when you do it yourself, you can also bring in some more esoteric highlighting of code. For example, here, this is a language that is usually not supported by these standard like highlighting processors. So I brought in my highlighting because I need it for this open type future code. So there is other highlighting. So if you have it in your control, you can do it. And in the end of a talk or something, always asks, hey, can you have, or can we put a PDF online? And then I'm always a little bit like, well, usually my slides are having some interactivity, but of course I understand that. I prefer to give a link away, but also when they need a PDF, I basically just print my website, and I have some special styling. CSS is giving us all the option to have also for paged media like PDF, like a correct styling. So I can transform them to a proper PDF. Then what I like the most is when I'm having it under control, I can extend it like how I want to do it. I already showed you before that I usually load the logic. This is like very basic that I can flip from slide to slide, but I also have some kind of modules, and these modules, they bring in so-called custom HTML elements. So the most important is the slide framework itself. It loads basically this markdown file. So this is all behind like this one tag. It's loading. And then I can, for example, bring in other like modules. It's basically just an HTML custom element. And for example, here I have a timer. So for workshops, I just have a timer that counts down so that when I have some interaction, I can say, hey, when you see, you have 1 minute time. Also, like other stuff, also in workshop settings, sometimes when you need inspirational quote or something to do, then you can have like different interactive elements. Also, like during COVID, I needed to do something. So, for example, by the way, this is also an on-screen menu that I usually have, so plugins can also register there. And when you have like presentations online and you have the screen shared only for your slides, sometimes you also want to have your face in it, so I also did some kind of video on that. Also, I'm super annoyed, like when I need to do QR codes, there are all these terrible online generators, and sometimes you want to have, hey, go to this site and blah, blah, blah. So I also have modules for that. So over the years, I did all these little custom HTML elements, and I can embed these like modular in my slides, and that gives my slide set deck in the end. Any questions?
Great. So there's actually, there's a question. Frank has a question. And Abe has a question.
Images. If you're inlining images, you didn't show, I mean, I know it's not that complicated, but I was surprised you didn't demonstrate. Yeah.
Okay. Totally valid. Of course, like Markdown supports, images I didn't show. I also have like layouts with columns, and but this is just my custom thing that I bring to it. But like the image, of course, work for like in very different layouts, and also tables and blah blah blah. Charts, I think I never did it, but it's pretty, as I showed, you can just do in the custom element, and it's basically nowadays one prompt away.
One more question, and then Timothy will take over.
Variation of that question is video. Can you also embed full window videos?
Yes, because like we are in a browser, so this is basically you just place in the video element. So it's the most simple stuff, but I also didn't mention that. Yeah, lists and all the regular HTML element, you can just put it in there, because like when you transform from Markdown to HTML, if you already have HTML in the Markdown, it's leaving it like that. So that's also why the custom elements are also just like passed on and then placed in your browser.
Okay, thank you very much. Give it up for Stefan. And hello to Timothy, who is going to present his...
Thank you. My name is Timothy Giet. I'm longtime Krita contributor and co-maintainer of J'ai Compris. So J'ai Compris is an educational software for children. We have like around 200 different activities on all kinds of topics for children from 2 to 10 years old. So it's very progressive. And recently we added a few activities for drawing and doing creative stuff. So that's what I'm going to show. A bit of history, J'ai Compris started in 2000. So it's very old software. In the buffer space, it was written in GTK. And in 2014, the original developer migrated it to rewrote it from scratch in Qt, QML. And that's the time when I joined the project. And in the old version, it had a drawing activity for kids, except it didn't have it. It was just embedding TuxPaint, if you know it, which is a separate software which was embedded, and it just had a launcher to that software. And when we rewrote to QML, we could not do that anymore, really. So we lost that drawing activity. So it was something we wanted to do from that time to get a new one. But it was a bit tricky because in that QML version, all the activities are, our goal is to make them only with pure QML and JavaScript, and try to not make C++ stuff for each activity. We have a C++ core, but try each activity is just QML.js. And so making the drawing activity with that, it required to use the QML canvas component, which is like the HTML canvas, but with its own limitations and quirks. So it was a bit difficult. It had some issues, especially on Android and with screens with high DPI. So we had like 3 students at different times trying to do that, and every time they hit some limitation and we could not make it work. So at some point when we reported to Qt 6, I did it myself, rewrote from scratch and get past all the limitation one at the time. And then we have that activity sketch, which is also for those who remember the old Krita sketch from the last decade, which was a kind of experimental interface for when ultrabooks with touchscreen started to appear. And so I reused some IDs and even some icons that I did for that Krita sketch at that time. So that sketch activity is very simple and very limited in features. It's on purpose because it's meant to be something for kids to get started to use digital painting. So it doesn't even have layers, it just still have a few different tools, and like drawing tools, there's like 6 different drawing engines with different kinds of settings. So for example, this is like the sketch brush in Krita, but with very limited settings. And like you see that kind of brush which makes particles. Drawing with touchpads is always tricky, but it's fun. Okay. Anyway, so we have those tools like shape tools and gradients and stamp tools. We reuse a lot of images we have already in the software. We can use as stamps, text tool, also very basics, and eraser and color selector. Well, something very simple. And then after this activity, we shipped early last year. And a few months later, then a contributor got inspired by it and reused some of the code to make a new activity, which is drawing wheel. This one is like a spirograph, a virtual spirograph with you can select different size of external wheel and the gear inside it, and select the position of the pen inside and different kinds of settings, and press play and it will draw the hypotrochoid shapes. And yeah, you can have fun creating various shapes with that. And the good thing is that this one can save in SVG format, so you can use it to create some shapes that you can then open in Inkscape and as base for any kind of graphic work. As a side note, if you open it in Inkscape, you will probably want to first do a simplify pass on it, because it's just like a huge number of points with straight lines. So a simplify action on it will just reduce the number of points and make it more editable. And so this one we released early this year. And recently the same contributor started another activity again, which is Compass. And it's like an activity to draw with a virtual compass. So by default, it has a template mode. So you see on the side, there's like a template with different steps. So you can replicate the template side, step by step. And or just use it as inspiration. You see, you just move the compass, move the other side, and you can position the origin differently and move the stylus to draw. And the other mode is free mode without any template. So you can draw for free as you want. And so if you have any other ideas of activities for kids, you're welcome to contact us, or we welcome all kinds of contributions, of course. On our website, gcompli.net, you can find the information you need for that. And that's it.
Questions? Frank, the man of the questions.
Was there a particular time when you first became interested in this project?
I became interested in the project. I didn't have kids yet. It just happened because I was Twitter contributor. I was in the KDE community. And so when the creator of the software rewrote it in QML, he joined the KDE community to host the project. And so I could meet him at the KDE conference. And I knew the software, and one of the issues it had is because all the graphics were the random images, clip arts. It didn't have any graphic vision. So I joined the project as graphic artist to make graphic guidelines and stuff, and became developer like that in the software.
Okay, any more questions? Anything? So I'm going to look into that because
If you have kids, definitely you should
find out with them if it's something for them. But it's battle tested. I've just seen it, so I'm pretty sure it will work out. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thomas, are you ready? Okay. So Thomas is next, he has an infinity slider and he has my microphone.
Hey. So I want to share an idea.
Yeah.
While my notebook is booting up. So I think I'm the only one here that doesn't have a battery in his machine, which makes it, but you have to focus and watch actually the talks instead of playing with your notebook while this thing is booting up.
I think we should duplicate.
Do you get some output? Windows, I love you so much.
Okay,
sorry about that. This is the worst. Okay, so I want to talk about entering numbers and an idea for entering numbers. And so I think that one of the things you do with procedural computer graphics is like not drawing, but actually to tweak numbers. Most of the time you tweak numbers. Okay, you have some ops or you write some shader codes, but eventually, at least for me, I spend more than half of the time to tweak numbers. And there are a bunch of like UIs for that. So obviously there's a slider, there's a virtual slider, maybe you have a degree slider like in CoolLab. And once in Houdini has a value ladder. I think Touch Design also has a value ladder. And we tried all kinds of different things for that. So let me create a blob here. So let's say all of these are numbers. So you have a scale here, and you have like a stretch here. And the problem is that the value range is like, could be infinite. You know, it could be like a position in space. Could be something like a field of view where you have like teeny weeny changes have like huge impact. could be like small, like edge detection or so, where small number ranges are important. And so I basically spent the last maybe 30 years or so doing these kinds of things. And I came up with different variations of how to tweak numbers. And the idea I wanted to share, which I hope could spread to other software, is what I call an infinity slider. And I actually think this is the only good idea I ever had in my life. So pay attention. So the idea is that with a slider, you have like one direction, left and right, up and down, depends, you know, some implementation depends. But actually, this is a poor choice because while dragging, you actually have like a two-dimensional surface. And so the way this works in Tixel is, so you have like this thing, which I call like the infinity slider. And by default, it has a veil scale, that right now is like at one. And so basically you can go up and like back and forth. It will show you like this predefined veil range that you can clamp to, but you don't have to. This is the definition of the input. But if you go up here, then you see how basically the value range basically gets into literally infinity. And then if you go back down, it will go into like negative and like inverse infinity, you could say. And so a friend of mine who also comes from a demo scene, like he had the same challenge with his demo scene tool back then, Werkzeug, it was called. And his challenge was, okay, find the fastest way to enter 10,000.1. But what a keyboard, of course. And it's like, it's a terrible problem. Of course, you can, okay, I can do this, but you know, maybe if I could press like this control number, you know, like we could go into smaller, faster resolution. So this is normal key with Blender, you know, you have shift and then it's divided by 10, but it's not precise enough. And so what this thing is, so you can basically use these two directions and then go into like tweaking things very gracefully and fastly and quickly. So yeah, that's actually all I wanted to say. It's the implementation is not large. Maybe it's like 300 lines of code. And actually, I would love to see this spreading in other open source software. So that's all I have.
Questions? Oh, I have two microphones. There's a question. Yeah, you can understand one.
Have you had some feedback from users? Because as a programmer, I find the idea very appealing and very nice and elegant. And from the very little thing I know about Tixel, I know that some people don't like it too much. So what is your experience? What is the feeling of users?
So for me, I think I'm really into things that that I think I'm into skills. And like skills are not like a binary thing. So, hey, now I know how to enter, like, let's say, how to use this will effect in like a shader programming. But skills are like you, it's like swimming. You know, the more you do it, the faster you get, or like the gracefully, more like more energy efficient. And for me, I think like, if people don't find a way to change it to the value ladder, like, you know, there's all, like, we have all kinds of different virtual sliders in there, then after half an hour, they will never go back. You know, like, and it's like a lot of people like, oh, like, I wish I would have this in Blender or whatever, like, you know, like, Krita, like, all kinds of things where you actually have to tweak numbers. And so, yeah, it's one of these things, I think, like, for most people, like, half an hour, and then they, you can really see them instead of going like this, or instead of going like this, they will go into like these value finding curves where they like, they shoot up, then they slowly, and then they land on their precise thing they want to see. I mean, sometimes it doesn't make sense, you know, like sometimes your course is good enough, but sometimes actually you want to find like this edge of like this position for the camera to look at this corner, and for this is like, and like, I don't know, like, let's say as a challenge here, let's say I would want to move to this edge here. You know, then I can, use this position, move it, and then, find the way. And then I go fine, and then basically go super fine to get this. And like there is no other way. I don't know any other way to do these kinds of things. So yeah.
There's another question.
I mean,
just answer question.
Okay. Just want to say that Krita has a very limited and simplified version of it. For like a size slider for the brushes, for example, if you keep the cursor close to the slider, then like you make big changes. But if you like drag very far away from it, then you can like very precise changes.
Mm-hmm.
So it's also like two-dimensional, but it's not really shown and like not really explained anywhere. But it works.
Yeah, I mean, up and down. And I think like the iPhone also has this with scrubbing through videos or something like this. So it's like not unheard of, but like it's the thing with like doing it logarithmically. So yeah, took me a bunch of iterations to figure this out. And yeah, maybe I can establish it as a standard. It's called Infinity Slider.
Okay, thank you very much. Actually, I put myself into the list next, so I'm going to moderate myself into the speaking position. And after me, Carsten is scheduled, and then Pippin. I guess we will have time for you because we still have 27 minutes left, and I'm pretty sure make it short and messy. So just getting set up. But I just had it in the last break with Simon. That's the wrong one. That's the right one. Just showed him a bit around with the tooling we made for the Libre Graphics. That's self-referential. For the Libre Graphics meeting website, so we have this shader, WebGL shader stuff running in the background. Libre Graphics meeting, that stuff, right? This is not animating right now. Now it's animating, and this is animated in a website worker, and that's running WebGL shader and 3JS. Nothing coming out there. Oh, it's a problem. Yeah. I know what the problem is. So website and myself up live. This is self-referential. Well, we're going to pick maybe another page because I'm really. So this is our venue. And we have this animation in the background. And I just wanted to show you some cool design things we can do with like figuring out how this conference should look. And I'm concentrating, I will concentrate on the shader stuff. So this is it's now my local host, not the website. And this is the actual JavaScript we sent out. It's really messy. I'm sorry. I didn't have time to make this nicely, but I left in some configurations that we can play with actually. And this is basically loading our theme, which is called Pale CMY2. Now I'm going to load a theme for the halftone shader, which is called Gray and Edge. It has an edge detection running and it has two black channels. And it's really going to look a bit different, but basically this is what we can do with this website. And when I go to, so another thing I wanted to present as well is that this website is also the production engine basically for this conference. And for the videos, we have intro clips, which we are playing. And so when I go to program and then change the program part to clips, I get this rendering of the intro clip. Oh, and that one, so is not configured from the main's website, but here. told you it's going to be messy. Oh, where's this configuration coming in? I don't know. We need to tweak something else. So the state is coming from here. So this is a copy of the state. So it's not still called like that, but I can still change some stuff here. Maybe don't do it in OKLCH. Maybe just do one channel red and look at this now. So now we have red channel and, we have this rotation per second, which the raster is actually rotating. We can speed that up and make it this kind of. Maybe you can see this already. So, red raster. Going to maybe make this one a green one. I don't know. It's a real fun engine, anyways, to play with and. To change the conference appearance, and I actually designed just in these JSON or YAML based one thing I can show you is configuration files. So these typography boxes also make text fitting into the box. So when I change. I need to change maybe the tagline now, the title box. Yes. So I make this wider or smaller, and then typography will still fit in. Hopefully, so making this smaller. Going to reload this. Now it's just smaller, but still fitting into the box because the font is amazing. It can be squeezed. Can make it still smaller, 300. And then, at some point we can't make the font any narrower, so it's going to compensate with weight. That's what's happening here. That's I programmed that into the thing. So I really had a lot of a good time creating this tool actually. And it started here with this testing ground, I would say, and with Elephant's Dream as a movie. So this is Elephant's Dream running with 60 frames per second. I think I can kind of in a crazy.
The machine is like my clock. One move out of place, and you mount to a pulp.
This isn't it. Like
pulp, Emo! Is that what you want? Pulp? Emo, your goal in life. Pulp!
You can look that up in the conference design. So that's what I was saying, so we can have fun movie parties. And I would love to do that.
This thing my favorite is the Shanghai full screen button. It's a screen button. Make this bigger.
You can go into the channels and change the dot sizes. That's cage. That part is broken. So that's basically, I just wanted to show you that I had a lot of fun creating a tool to make the design of this this conference. The clip you've seen, they are live on the website, and we are using Puppet here to just render frames of them, and then FFmpeg script to make a video out of it. So there's a static website which has a full conference production engine somehow baked into it, and a fun design tool as well, which is probably not going on from here. This is just where it's going to stay, but I will personally take out some parts and use them somewhere else, I'm sure. But if you're interested to, don't know, do something with it or to you know, talk to me and can maybe find something. So that's my talk. Thanks. Questions?
Do we have some of the code of this available shared somewhere, anywhere?
Yes. The liberal graphics meeting website and the static website generator, which is based on 11T, is you can get there via the contacts page, basically. That's on KDE. And the other thing is, I don't have the link put out, but I can maybe point you somewhere. It's on Codeberg. It's open source, free software. You can get there. It's a mess because I didn't have a lot of time. I really didn't make it nice. I made some web coding there just to get things done. It was really a crazy time. Not a lot of time to do this. Some parts are better thought out, and some parts are just shit. Tomorrow is the conference. This needs to run. So don't ask me. Don't look at the quality of that. I'm just happy that it's holding together, and it just needs to fly for two more days. It's looking nice and working so far. Yeah, the program page was too big, and the buffer for the WebGL was getting too big, and then the image was on phones was like totally distorted until one day before the conference, and someone pointed it out to me, and so I had to make some crazy last minute fixes, which is not so easy because it's not like just like, you know, stupid logic error. It's just buffer is too big. Need to do some tiling. It's not trivial. But so that's where I was like, okay, let's wipe code it away. Never go back there. Okay. Carsten, do you even need a computer?
No, I'm here.
Nice. Okay, you can have mine though.
Yeah. You can have slides.
Okay.
All right. Hello, I'm Carsten. I just want to talk really briefly about, maybe plans is too big of a word, but ideas we have for the open raster format, which might be interesting for other projects in the Libre graphics space. Open Raster Archive, also known as ORA, O-R-A, is a format that was actually invented at the first LGM, I think, which was meant as a interchange format between different raster editors. So for example, it's a program that Krita can open, Drupal can open, MyPaint, I think Scribus 2 and GIMP. They all open this, and it's like a PSD file format, like the Photoshop file format, but cool and open source and better. It's really a zip file with a bunch of PNGs in there and an XML describing the structure. What we from the Krita team had some ideas for was, well, it would be nice if we could interchange animation between different programs as well. Drupal already uses the ORA format to store its animations, but it's like not in a portable format. If you open it in Krita, it's just gone. So we had some ideas in that regard. Maybe we could make it compatible. There is some impedance mismatch because the two programs represent animations in different ways. Like Drupal is a shared canvas. It might have multiple animations, stuff like that. But we had some ideas, like maybe we just append them to each other or something like that. And what would also be very nice if you could just open an ORA file, or at least import an ORA file into a video editor like Kdenlive, for example. So you just save your ORA file, open it in Kdenlive, and just start editing it without having to like dump it into a bunch of JPEGs or something, and then import it in a more complicated way. And that's basically the bulk of my talk, what I wanted to talk about, a little bit about the Open Raster file format. Since I saw there were like some new projects shown in the state of Libre graphics, maybe they are also interested in implementing open raster support. If so, like, I don't know, contact the Krita team or me in Drupal or something. We got code you can steal. Maybe you're interested, or maybe also for animation. And that's already it. Thanks. Any questions? Okay.
Any questions? So while Pippin is setting up, and we don't have questions, I have another announcement. We kind of spontaneously scheduled yesterday the group photo into the next break, which we're going to take outside in front of the door. There's a arrangement of beautiful flowering, blossoming trees. So we are going to get in front of them. Someone is making a photo in that direction. I think that should work out nicely. I didn't actually check the location, but you know, the sun is coming from here, so it's not into our faces, should work out, and we have some backdrop. So let's meet after the talks outside for the group photo. It's a nice group, so I'm looking forward to that, and give it away to Pippin.
I'm not going to talk about this. I'm going to talk about color. And in particular, I'm going to talk about color vision. So humans come in four different varieties. There are monochromats, who have one-dimensional color vision. Then there is dichromats, who have two-dimensional color vision. Most people are trichromats and have three-dimensional color vision. Some women are tetrachromats and have four-dimensional color vision. The particular thing I'm talking, going to focus on in what I'm actually going to talk about, not this thing that resembles what Lasse was doing, is an attempt at creating a terminal palette that is optimized for dichromats, the people who are so-called colorblind or have color discrimination deficiencies. And this is, both of these sides are the same. And what I rather will actually show is a more well-known palette. We have CGA or the EGA 16 colors on the right-hand side, and on the left-hand side there's an optimized version of the same. What we see here is the 16 colors of CGA intersected with each other. As a trichromat would see it, and this is an RGB image, so there's three color components, so we have a full three dimensions. And then there are three different types of dichromacy, the people who have two-dimensional color vision, deuteranopia, tritanopia, and plutanopia. And in the original version of CGA, we can see that the color differences simulated are quite terrible on some of them. And figuring out a way to actually optimize something resembling a palette, because if you look at these two, they almost look the same, but there has been tweaks done so that the worst case scenario for tritanopia has a delta E of around 20, which is actually quite decent. And I would like to ask, are there any color discrimination deficient people or so-called colorblind people in the audience? Oh, none. I was hoping to actually get some verification that this thing actually works. But the palette that I have been using in my terminal is this one, or I have also a slight variation of it. And if using these colors as the default palette in my terminal means that any person who has any form of color blindness would actually have an experience of actually having contrast, no matter which kind of colors you use. That's very good for accessibility. And it's quite a lot better than some other kind of color schemes. So if you take, for instance, the colors of putty, here we have the original kind of worst case scenarios. And these are the ones I have optimized. Optimizing this, the way I did it, it's kind of like a strange three-dimensional N queens so that no queen can attack each other. You can see the kind of a color cube, and there's like looking at it from three different directions, none of the colors should be too close to each other. So what I do is that I take the original color palette, and then I just like randomly slightly jiggle the colors around, until kind of it gets better. I find a local optimum. It doesn't kind of like find a global optimum for optimizing it. It just takes the starting palette and nudges things around until it gets better for the different types of color vision. And I've also been experimenting with different ways of doing kind of like color gradients that should end up being good for multiple. But to return to the ones I have, or my slight alternative at the moment, at the bottom, I also have sorted the colors according to luminance and have the difference in luminance. And I probably shouldn't have optimized it this hard that it actually is discriminatable also in grayscale, because it harms some of the other things. And one of the problems in this color palette is that the dark blue is a little bit too dark, so that when it's shown on black, it doesn't stand out as much as it could. Yeah, that is actually what I wanted to show. Any questions?
Oh, there are questions. Very good.
First, I think I'm too slow today. Can you explain the slide? Can you explain the slide again a little bit slower? I think I'm too stupid to follow.
So we have the goal is to have 16 colors, like the standard terminal colors, in such a way that most forms of human vision can discriminate any pair. So you could have foreground and background. So that is the reason I have this kind of X and Y axis and kind of intersecting each other. These markings are the worst color pairs here for the trichromat, that these are the colors that are closest to each other. So this for deuteranopia is the same, but then it's different colors when you simulate that type of color vision deficiency. So those are the three worst. And for this type, those are the three worst. And this is not only visualization in the algorithm that I have used for optimizing. I specifically try to nudge those colors around to give them slightly more contrast. And I'm not done with this. I have been revisiting this project for probably the last 3 or 4 years. And as I mentioned, if the blue on black, dark blue on black is something I know needs further optimizing.
So you can compute programmatically a given color, how it's going to be perceived by different color blindness, right? So I'm just curious how you can compute a given color. How does it work? How do you know how a given type of color blindness is going to perceive a given color?
So what I have, the first time I did this, I used some lookup tables and some algorithms. And last time I revisited it, I found a library. On GitHub, which is called libDaltonLens, which allows you to feed it basically RGB colors and which type of color deficiency you have and what the output is. And this is someone who has gone through the literature and says, like, these approaches are what seems to actually most closely match the different genetic varieties of humans. So that is what I've been used for the actual simulation. The code for the optimization is a bit messy, so I don't have it on this web page, but there is links to these palettes in multiple formats as hex colors, GIMP palette format, or even a file containing an escape sequence that if you just cap this file in your terminal, it reprograms your current session so that it uses that palette instead.
Any other questions? Okay, thank you.
Now that I finally understand. So it would be really cool to have an online service where you paste in a bunch of a theme, basically, because I deal with themes quite a lot and basically optimize the themes for accessibility. Be something nice.
Well, for themes, yes, but for me, it's more of like having what should be the default palette in a terminal that should work for anyone, and then you can choose your own custom one that works for you. But the default should be something that works for everyone, is kind of my opinion. And so some of these things, like the CGA one, or if you look at the Tango one, knowing that we should be able to get to a delta E of 20 and seeing that it has like 9 and 3.5 in some of the pairs, it's like, there is room for improvement. And yeah, that is kind of an optimized version of Pango, but a local optimum in the vicinity of where the Pango palette originally, or the Pango palette originally was. I can share the code. I don't think I would make an online service of it, but if you have a palette you want me to optimize, I could do that as well. Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. So that concludes our lightning talk session for today, and we're great in time, actually.